From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. We hear about climate change all the time, but how much of what we hear is true? How much is an exaggeration, and how much should we pay attention to it? In a world where fake news grabs headlines, it's hard to know what to believe. Today on our show, we're talking with the scientist and author of A Survival Guide to the Misinformation Age. He will attempt to shed some light on the subject. We will also talk with an FGCU professor who signed on to a letter urging the Trump administration to accept climate science as real. Plus, a new report shows that children in Florida's quality of life ranks among the lowest in the country. We'll talk with the director of that study about that pile of numerical data and what story it tells about our state's kids. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Mahatma Gandhi, Harry S. Truman, and Pope John Paul II echoed a similar sentiment. A society should be judged by how it treats its most vulnerable members. And while resilient, children are most certainly vulnerable. That's why organizations like Kids Count exist, to hold us accountable for how we're treating our children. Here in Florida, the latest report was released this week, and it shows we have some work to do. Noreen Dillard is the director of Florida Kids Count and joins us now to go over this report and share with us ways in which we could improve. Thanks for joining us today, Noreen.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We are talking about the latest report on child welfare in the state of Florida. How do you think we're doing? If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Noreen, can you tell me a little bit about how this report quantifies a child's quality of life? What aspects or categories comprise the data?
We look at data across five domains, including demographic data, economic data, educational data, data on health status, and some risk factors. We draw those from publicly available sources. We also include some data that put together by the United Way on household survival budgets. And we put them together so that we're able to say in a snapshot, how children are faring in Florida. We're funded by the Casey Foundation, who also who produces a report annually that ranks states 1 to 50. And in that regard, based on 16 indicators of child well-being, we rank 40th. And like the data we collect here in Florida, those include economic well-being, education, health, as well as four indicators related to families and communities.
So Florida is ranked 40th out of 50.
Correct.
And that's not really where you want to be. What are the strengths and weaknesses of Florida regarding kids?
Oh, sure. the strengths that we've noticed, the trends, our graduation rates are improving. We've are experiencing reductions in teen births, in the numbers of low birth weight babies born are definitely areas that we have improved. We actually have more teens in school and working than we did 5 years ago. So all of those things are definitely encouraging.
Mm-hmm. But one of the weaknesses, I think we ranked at 47 out of 50, was in the area of health.
That's correct. And the drivers there, although we are definitely making inroads, are access to health insurance. And we've made a lot of inroads largely through public sources and insuring kids, Florida KidCare. The enrollment rates have been going up. The Kaiser Foundation's most recent report shows that there's an increase in access to health care, which is phenomenal. However, we still, relative to our peers in other states, we're still behind in expanding access to health insurance.
Yeah, well, what amazed me is that since the last report, according to your data, even though the rate of uninsured kids in Florida dropped by 25%, we still have 500,000 kids that are not insured in spite of the Affordable Care Act and Florida Kid Care. How bad was it even before that?
In 2008, almost 20% of kids were lacking health insurance in Florida. So, I mean, it is quite substantial.
It was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. That's rough. But Florida Kid Care, can you tell me a little bit about that program? That's a statewide program for kids for health insurance?
Yes. Medicaid funds for children who live in poverty and pregnant mothers. It funds insurance for children with disabilities and using federal funds matched by state funds. The Children's Health Insurance Program also provides some funding for health insurance for kids.
So even though we're doing better and we have more kids that are insured than we did in the last one, we still are ranking pretty low there in the health. Is that all about the health care coverage, or are there other factors that determine that?
Well, looking at the CAHSI ratings, like I said, we've actually improved in every one of the four domains that comprise that. So low birth weight babies, kids without health insurance, child and teen death rates, as well as teens who abuse alcohol and drugs. And over the 5 years that CAHSI reports on, there's been improvements. However, other states are improving at a greater rate. And that's sort of the nature of indices. And that's some of what why we're so far behind. It doesn't let us off the hook, I don't think, with staying on track with we've seen improvements in access to prenatal care, which is contributing to the fewer lower birth weight babies. So it's not that we're not doing good work, but I think what the data say are keep us focused that there's still a lot to do.
There's still work to do. We are talking about the state of children in Florida with Director of Kids Count Noreen Dillard. You can become part of the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. The state as a whole is ranking low, but your data is broken out into individual counties. Specifically in Southwest Florida, do our counties fall in line with state numbers, or do we have any extremes down here?
In some areas, yes, you are on par with the state. And as a sort of a region, and in speaking to your producer, we included Charlotte, Collier, DeSoto, Glades, Hendry, Lee, and Monroe to put together some sort of regional data. Definitely in some of your counties, you have Hendry County, for example, who has a high proportion of children under five to begin with. We looked at poverty for each of the counties in areas of concentrated poverty. And among children living in poverty in DeSoto County, 43% of kids are living in poverty, which is well above the one in four kids or 24% of kids statewide living in poverty. So there are definitely some areas of highly stressed communities, I guess I would say, in the Southwest region.
Yeah, Hendry's at 58%. I was looking at the numbers, and I've got this particular part is about children living in areas of concentrated poverty. What does that mean, living in an area of concentrated poverty?
Okay, so living in areas of concentrated poverty, those come from census data. And when they say concentrated poverty, that means that the child is living in a census tract where 30% of the residents are living in poverty, meet federal thresholds for poverty. The lower number that I quoted, although still pretty high, 36% in Hendry for children in poverty overall in the county. So that's still more than one in three kids.
Yeah.
And then of those, there are small areas of, dense population. And Hendry, if I am correct, has small areas of urban, small, concentrated residents, urban, mm-hmm. and then a lot of rural areas. And that juxtaposition really sort of contributes to that high rate of concentrated poverty. I recognize it's a smaller population. So in Lee County, by comparison, so you have a big metropolitan area, you have sort of suburban and ex-urban areas, so it's more evenly distributed. And just it's very stark, stark contrast.
Yeah,
in Henry.
The Lee County was at 16%, and that was the closest to the statewide average, which is 14.8, mm-hmm. which still statewide, one in four is living in a poverty condition. How does that impact a child and their well-being?
Poverty is, I guess it's maybe not a duh finding, but poverty has really sort of wide-ranging effects for kids. It is related to proper development because, in part, kids are at nutritional risk. They don't have same access to stimulation and enrichment kinds of activities that their peers might have. So there are some – there really are some physical ramifications of poverty. they don't children in poverty often don't have access to better quality schools, so they don't have that those kinds of supports around them. And in these areas of concentrated poverty, there can be food deserts, so people not having access to grocery stores, and so they're not getting all the things that they need. From that perspective, they don't tend to attract businesses to those areas, so the unemployment rates tend to be higher. So there's really quite a snowball effect from the fact of living in poverty.
And there was a really interesting thing that you had throughout the study, which was the graphics that were on the side for each county, and it had the household survival budget numbers. Can you tell me a little about that?
Sure. The United Way has put together a household survival budget available on the web, and they're actually getting ready to update it this year, I believe. And what they said, what they compared was the federal poverty thresholds, and then they looked at what does it actually take for a household of two adults, a child, and an infant to live not even comfortably, but so that they can make all their bills. And it turns out that I'm looking at Lee County, for example, and this is from their United Way's 2014 report. It's $4,058 a month to pay for child care, a cost of $1,000. Of $979 and $1,000 in rent. And there's something, a phenomenon called housing cost burden, in which people are expending 30% or more of their income on their housing, which doesn't leave a lot of room for other things, including activities for their kids. So what the housing cost housing survival budget is really trying to make the statement, the federal poverty thresholds do not really account for the true costs of raising a family.
Yeah, the federal poverty thresholds probably do not take into account the 75% higher cost of housing in Collier County than the rest of the nation. So, yeah, we do have some high housing costs down here, specifically in Southwest Florida. And on that graphic, the statewide average was $3,957 a month just to get by when you have two adults, an infant, and a child in school. So my next question is, you know, if somebody's lucky enough to have a job that pays them $10 an hour, which is above minimum wage, and they're working full time at 40 hours a week, and they'll bring in about $1,700 a month, and that's before taxes. If you factor in the cost of just the child care, you're bringing in only a few hundred dollars, which you have to have the child in child care so you can go and work. So in exchange for working hard and not seeing your kids as much, do you see a lot of households going down to a single parent working because they just don't think it's worth it?
I don't actually have the data on that specific phenomenon, but that would seem to make sense. Why would you expend that amount of money when you could do just as well not working and you still can be at home with your child and doing the things that we all love to do with our children, spend time with them, you know, read with them, go to the park, whatever.
And cook something nutritious instead of going through a drive-thru.
Exactly right, because you're on such a pressed time frame. So, mm-hmm. Yes, that would make sense to me.
Does Florida Kids Count make suggestions for changes based on the data that they collect?
We do, and I'll start with – we don't comment on specific legislation or things like that, but we do have some general policy strategies that we do recommend. What I would say is, one is that we do need to address poverty, and that may be in part through efforts to raise the minimum wage. As you said, the cost of, you know, people, someone who makes $10 an hour is still not sufficient to, you know, pay for a two-bedroom apartment. You'd have to make almost $20 an hour in order to afford an apartment that didn't exceed 30% of your income. Mm-hmm. So definitely raising the minimum wage is a strategy to do that. Looking at ways that address poverty, whether it's parental education, we do report on the data of the number of households whose heads of household don't have high school diplomas. And although, again, it's improving, it's something like 11% statewide. And let's say Lee County. Oh, one moment. Let's see. I want to make sure I get this right.
It's hard keeping track of all this data.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot.
It is a lot of data. But whatever. It is 11% statewide. And, you know, so anything that we can do to support parents to support their children is important. And some of that is through direct action, such as raising the minimum wage. But other strategies include increasing awareness about things that people are eligible for. For example, eligibility for nutrition programs, making sure people know where they can get food for their kids, that they're eligible at school for nutrition, their summer nutrition programs, things as simple as the earned income tax credit, and making sure that people are applying for that increases a household's income.
All right.
Sometimes and substantially.
It really does. And just awareness of what programs are available. So we're going to have to leave it there for today. Thank you for talking with us today, Noreen Dillard from Florida Kids Count. We appreciate your time and the work that you've done to hold us all accountable for taking care of our kids. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chinqui, with technical help from A.J. Leonard. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. Tomorrow on Gulf Coast Live, a group of local women is going to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration to join a women's march. We'll discuss what's motivating them and learn more about local marches planned in Southwest Florida. Plus, an author who lives in Cape Coral will be inducted into the Florida Artists Hall of Fame next month. We'll chat with Lee Bennett Hopkins about the honor and about some of his work. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7, FM NPR for Southwest Florida.